Listen, the birds sing. Listen, the bells ring. All the living are dead, and the dead are all living. The war is over, and we are beginning.
Chapter 7. Natasha ambushes him outside the locker rooms after another morning spent training and says, "Let me buy you lunch." He bites back the first instinctual, "No thanks," and a litany of excuses to get him out of it gracefully. His hair's still wet, poking up in strange little spikes as it always does since PR put him in the barber's seat, and Beck's novel is burning a hole through his bag. The new agent they have training him, on every new combat style that's developed in the last century and every new weapon, is a shade too brutal for Steve's liking. So he's got a bruise on his shoulder that still hasn't gone away. Mostly, the very last thing he'd like to do is eat lunch with anyone other than Beck and Rachel. But Natasha hasn't been around in at least a month. It's been long enough that her hair is straight and severe now, a bob that angles sharply towards her chin. She's also studying him too intently, her head cocked to the side and face blank, except for something calculating happening around the eyes. Saying no would be like admitting that he barely has the energy to leave the apartment, so he smiles blandly and nods, following her outside into the heinous spectacle that is now Times Square. They get cold borscht and vareniki. Natasha looks at him expectantly as he takes the first bite of soup. "My friend does it better," Steve says, when Natasha looks disappointed that he ain't particularly surprised by food that isn't boiled cabbage. "This'll do, though." Natasha laughs, all tinkling and warm for someone so controlled. The sound is so startling, Steve drips a little on his shirt. "Have I ever heard you laugh before?" he asks, wiping at his t-shirt with his napkin. "Have I ever heard you laugh before?" Natasha replies. "Yeah, okay, fair enough." "We don't know each other very well," Natasha says. Even though fighting invaders from space is quite the bonding experience. "Well, you're the one who disappeared these last couple weeks. And we were so close to perfecting that move where I launch you 20 feet in the air with my shield, too." "Please," she says, waving him off. "It's closer to 30. So who's this friend of yours who makes a better borscht than Vanya? Could it be the infamous Rachel Barnes, fashion designer, activist, and formerly betrothed to our very own Captain America?" Steve snorts out a laugh, and it's the real deal. "Look at that," Natasha says. "Now I've heard you laugh. This has been quite the day of team bonding. I'm proud of us." "Huzzah," he drawls, smiling down into his borscht. They eat in silence for a few lovely minutes. Steve gives up trying to figure out what Natasha's goals are for the little outing, in favour of enjoying the pretty decent soup in front of him. "I want to meet her," Natasha says.
"Who?"
"You're betrothed." "She's not my betrothed. She was never my betrothed. I was her beard." He learned this phrase from one of the girls' photo albums, the one that's mostly newspaper clippings. There in bold black font, he found a headline from 1975. "Fashion icon calls Captain America her beard." There's a picture of Rachel looking furious and beautiful, accompanied by the whole article and a block quote. "I wasn't a woman scorned. He didn't betray me with Agent Carter. He was my beard, for goodness sakes." Apparently, the 30th anniversary remembrance of the Valkyrie going down had the press digging into old gossip, and Rachel yelled at them when she had enough. "And that's how I came out," Rachel said, when she caught him gaping at the article. So you really knew the whole time, huh? Natasha asks. About her and Rachel Barnes. Well, no. I knew about her and Zelda Corrigan. Her and Beck got together later, after the war. I'd like to meet both of them. Steve makes a non-committal sound into his borscht. What else would you like, huh? Why are we here? You need friends your own age, Rogers, she says. Isn't that and the team bonding not enough of a reason to grab a quick lunch? Steve leans back in his chair, crosses his arms over his chest, and waits. Despite it being the middle of the day, the cafe is empty. They're surrounded by suspiciously empty tables, and Natasha's little quips about him laughing feel like she's trying to butter him up. Okay, says Natasha, sighing as she reaches for her bag and pulls out a thick file. We've got a mission. The girls are out on the balcony when he gets home. He watches them through the glass for a moment, side by side in armchairs, facing the railing and looking out over Brooklyn. This morning, Beck didn't need any help getting out of bed, and her strength must have stayed up throughout the day, because she's only got a cane next to her now, instead of the wheelchair. Rachel cradles a mug of something warm between her hands to help with the arthritis. Beck's got whiskey. She puts a hand on Rachel's shoulder, and Rachel dutifully leans over, allowing Beck to kiss her cheek. Steve smiles, but it's painful, and he's got to look away. An hour ago, in a tiny Russian cafe, deserted except for him and Natasha, he said yes to a mission. He's not joining up or willing to do everything they want him to, but this mission he's taking. Mostly because Natasha explained exactly what they'll be doing and why it will save countless lives. Also, because if he keeps saying no, what will he have left to do with his life? Between the training and talking to Peggy about S.H.I.E.L.D. and Steve's lingering need to serve, this was inevitable. The girls ain't gonna like it. Steve helps himself to a beer and digs Beck's manuscript out of the bag before joining them. He's read it in under 48 hours, getting through the final chapter on the subway back from the city. Steve likes the subway. It's as putrid and strange as it's always been. Steve also likes the final chapter more than the second to final chapter, where he and Buck both died. In the last chapter, Rachel and Beck started to build a life together. Finished, he announces, loud enough for even partially deaf ears to hear. Outside of the context of war, Steve still ain't quite used to his advanced hearing and lack of debilitating illness. It's even worse when he sees the girls suffering like he used to. Beck frowns at him as he brandishes the manuscript around his head and then drops it in her lap with a flourish. Finished, Beck repeats. I have notes, he says, dropping down into the chair next to her. Notes, she repeats. For a minute, Steve has a hard time looking at her. She's doing the thing Bucky used to do so often, where he worked hard to look annoyed with Steve, and then just ended up smiling anyway. You know, she says, I'll have to rewrite it some, now that you ain't dead. Frankly, it's a real hassle. Yeah, yeah, he says, waving her off. Beck, you wrote a whole chapter about my ma, about my family. Where the hell did you learn all that? Half of it I didn't even know. Now Beck's smiling for real, downing her whiskey and setting aside the glass as she rests her hands on the book on her lap. At her far side, Rachel huffs. She's had that thing researched and outlined for 30 years, Rachel mutters. A lot comes from Emma, Beck replies. She just knew stuff, from being friends with Sarah. Some was digging through old records, army, immigration, the hospital, that sort of thing, But did you know Sarah gave Mara a whole box full of letters between her and Hildar before she died? Ones from the war, and before that. No, Steve whispers. No, I didn't. Why wouldn't she? Rachel throws her head back and laughs. Steve, trust me, you don't want to go reading all that. What? Why? They're a tad risque, Rachel explains. They're downright dirty, Beck adds. Sarah probably couldn't bear to throw them away, but didn't want you finding them, either. Your parents loved each other very much, Bubbele. We kept the letters safe for you. Oh, says Steve, slouching in his chair. When he started Beck's book, he expected to have his heart torn up pretty good, reading about Bucky and how they were seen through Rebecca's eyes. Learning so much about his own past was a delight, even if it reminded him just how much he still misses his ma, even after all these years. She never talked about him much. I didn't know it was like that, with them. Why wouldn't she even tell me about him, if she loved him so much? Grief does funny things to people, Beck murmurs. She exchanges a look with Rachel that Steve has no chances of comprehending. Yeah, Steve murmurs. He's mostly stopped having conversations in his head with Bucky, now that he's got Rachel and Beck right here. Still, he gets wrapped up in imagining what Bucky would say if he were around to watch Steve take on missions long after their war ended. He'd say nothing good. Probably, he'd be even more pissed than the girls are sure to be. Beside him, Beck opens her book to the title page, where she finds the first of 1,000 blue post-it notes. Steve is a big fan of post-its, and he stuck them all over Beck's book, commenting on parts he loves or things he'd forgotten, correcting small errors where Beck got a date or a street corner wrong, and making suggestions for whole chapters of the story she couldn't know about. Things that happened at bars when Rachel wasn't around, or how they were in the privacy of their own apartment, how they clung to each other during the war, but Bucky still felt so far away, even before Steve let him fall. The first post-it, stuck just below the title, simply reads, "Ouch." "Ouch," Beck reads, glancing up to frown at Steve. "You don't like the title?" There were so many other titles being thrown around for a minute there, Rachel says. Captain America the Heterosexual and Other Great Lies. Fuck you, Ronald Reagan. A Jew and a Catholic walk into Wallabout Market. Love Stories for Brooklyn Boys. Wow, says Steve. Those sure are something. But no, end of the line is good. Just hurts, you know? Ouch. Ouch, the girls echo. It's not the time to tell them about his upcoming mission. Maybe after dinner. Maybe in the morning. Who the hell is Ronald Reagan? Steve asks, when the sun starts to set. Rachel doesn't speak to him for 2 days, relenting only when he announces that he'll be leaving in the morning. Then she cries on him for a minute, makes him swear to stay safe, and then forces him to make Challa with her, even though he should really be getting a decent night's sleep. Beck just shrugs, says she trusts him, and makes him promise to work on her book with her when he gets back. Somehow, she refrains from lecturing him on American imperialism, but he's sure she'll have a dozen more books for him to read on the subject when he gets back. They're both awake to see him off in the morning, looking solemn and tired. Don't get blown up, says Beck, as Rachel tucks a wrapped loaf of challah into his bag. I won't, Steve promises, cracking a smile. This morning is so different from the one all those months ago when he set off to fight aliens. Now, he's got something to come home to. "We love you, Bubale," Rachel whispers as he slips out the front door. "Very much."
Shit! Ow! Fuck! God damn it!
Steve opens one eye to see Bucky hopping around on one foot. He's halfway dressed, pants secured around his waist and chest bare. His belt hangs open, flapping around as he jumps. Someone so absurd-looking should not be half as appealing. If Steve's arms were a little longer, he'd reach out and drag Bucky back to bed. But he's got no hope in catching Bucky all the way across the room without getting up himself, and he's far too lazy for that. He sighs into the pillow and says, "Language, Bucky." "Your shit is everywhere," Bucky continues, pointing an accusatory finger in Steve's direction, even as he bends down to rub his foot. "You messy little punk. That's the third goddamn morning I've stubbed my fucking toe." "You kiss your ma with that mouth?" "Not lately," Bucky says, kicking aside the clothes piled on the floor as he pulls on a fresh undershirt. "Have been kissing you plenty. You must be rubbing off on me. I always knew you were a bad influence." "You come a little closer and I'll influence you, all right. I'll influence you real good." The effectiveness of the line is somewhat lost when he lets out a big yawn at the end, but it still makes Bucky laugh. The sound is too loud, disrupts the quiet of the early morning, and probably their neighbours too. But Steve does not care, because Bucky's laugh is one of his favourite sounds, no matter what the time of the day. "You're ridiculous." Bucky struts over as he buttons up his work shirt. Steve makes a swipe for him, but after a week of waking up this way, Bucky's got his number, and he stays just out of reach. "Completely ridiculous." "How's the toe, pal?" he asks, keeping his arm stretched out as far as it will go, to encourage Bucky to take just one step in his direction. "Terrible. Throbbing. A mess. They're probably going to have to take it off, actually." "That's rough, buddy. Want me to kiss it better?" "Gross, no." Bucky laughs again. "Seriously, if we're going to keep pushing the beds together, we need to figure out where to put the dresser, because this room is dangerous to navigate first thing in the morning. And it don't help that somebody leaves his stuff everywhere." "You've been living with me long enough. You'd think you'd get used to it at this point." Bucky snorts. "I'm about to lose a toe over here. Do you not care? Are they going to have to take the whole foot before you finally start to pick your stuff up?" "Wow, I love you." Bucky rolls his eyes and looks all bashful, finally taking a step closer as he secures his belt. Steve hooks his hand around the back of Bucky's thigh, pulling until Bucky's kneeling over him at the bed's edge. "Don't wrinkle my shirt. Yesterday you wrinkled my shirt." Bucky's kissing him before he can even swear to do no damage to the shirt. He tastes clean, somehow managing to let Steve sleep through half his morning routine. And Steve stopped getting self-conscious over his morning breath on the third day they woke up this way. The kiss is a greeting, an ideal way to start the day, and a promise for more later. Steve nips at Bucky's lower lip and then pulls away, not wanting to be accused of making Bucky late for work, like he was on the second day they woke up like this. This morning it's Bucky, coming back for more, opening his mouth and seeking Steve's tongue. Bucky hums against his lips. "Good morning," he murmurs. "Get out of here, you jerk," Steve says, shoving him away. "You'll be late and try and pin it on me again." "What's your plan for today?" Bucky smiles down at him for a second, before going to dig around in his drawers for a tie. The dresser ended up at the foot of their beds when they pushed them together a couple days ago. It's partially blocking the door. That's the sort of question Bucky's always asked him. Every morning since they've been living together, Bucky's asked him about his plans for the day. But now he gets kisses too. "Thought I might clean up a little," Steve replies. At the mirror where he's tying his tie, Steve can see the reflection of Bucky rolling his eyes. "And maybe go to the bar. I haven't been a week and Rachel's probably worried. She probably thinks I'm mad at her." "Why would you be mad at her?" "Well..." Steve props himself up on his elbows. He winces a little, every muscle and nerve in his back protesting his change in position. The way they've been going at it every night is starting to take its toll on Steve's stupid, useless, aching body. And that's not going to work forever. Every time he touches Bucky, he's still a little convinced it's going to be the last time he's allowed to touch Bucky. And he refuses to let his crooked spine slow him down. "Steve," Bucky says, voice low and angry. "I'm fine." "Steve, we talked about this. And I said I'd tell you if it got to be too much, but it's not. I'm always a little sore in the morning." Bucky huffs and lets it go. "About Rachel?" "Oh, I didn't care for the way she was carrying on when we went out last weekend. She might think I'm mad over that." "I tell you what," Bucky says, giving himself a final look over in the mirror before deciding he's presentable enough for working. He comes to sit beside Steve on their push-together bed, his hand on Steve's back, tracing his crooked spine. "Why don't you lie low today? Go back to bed. Pick up your stuff. Work on that WPA piece, but only for an hour or so. Take it easy today, and then we'll both go to the bar tonight." "Together?" Steve says. "You'd go with me? Like, the two of us? Together?" "I don't really see much point in us arriving separately." "But, Bucky," Steve says, clutching his hand. "They'll all know. You get that, right? They'll look at you and us, and they'll think you're my date." "Well, I hope I'm a little more than just your date. Stop fretting. I want to see this infamous Sully's." "Okay." Steve turns away, so Bucky won't see how damn goofy his smile is. "Great," says Bucky, smacking a kiss on Steve's cheek. "It's a date." He pops out of bed and pulls on his jacket as he goes, pausing in the doorway to remind Steve to eat something before he gets sucked into painting. Steve's so thrilled that he treats himself and goes back to bed, falling asleep with his face in Bucky's pillow. "Well, look what the cat dragged in!" Rachel yells before Steve's all the way through the door. He grins at her and then shakes out his hair, wet from the spring storm. "Where the hell have you been? Are you mad at me? Was I too much? When we went out, was that too much? I'm sorry. You know how I can get caught up in..." She stops talking when she catches sight of Bucky, following in right after Steve. "Hi," Rachel says. She's practically vibrating with excitement, bouncing a little as she stands behind the bar, smiling huge. "Bucky, you're here. I'm buying you a drink. Sit, sit." They sit, peeling off damp jackets. "Who's getting a free drink?" Steve asks. Across the bar, Peter shifts a little and leans away from Raoul. He checks out Bucky from head to toe and then raises an eyebrow at Steve. Steve's starting to pick up on those silent cues, reading Peter's questions in his expression, in his body language. Is this guy safe? Is he one of us? I could go for a beer, Steve continues. He reaches up to squeeze Bucky's shoulder, his hand lingering for a moment as he nods across the bar at Peter. He's safe, Steve replies. And taken. Bucky is getting a drink, Rachel corrects. She beams at him, glares at Steve, and then goes back to beaming at Bucky. Bucky, I'm happy to see. You haven't been in here for decades, making me think you hated me after the double date situation, when really the whole thing worked out in your favour, huh? Bucky's called the last week a honeymoon. It's an accurate description, and Steve might have been buzzing with anticipation all day over bringing Bucky to the bar. But now he just wants to go home. Maybe do that thing they did last night. Or that other thing they did the night before that. He gets a little lost in his head, thinking of all the things they've done. Steve? Bucky elbows him gently, speaking right in his good ear. He's got a glass of whiskey halfway to his lips, and a look on his face like he said Steve's name more than once. On the other side of the bar, Rachel smirks. What? Sorry. What? Rachel bursts out laughing, and Bucky rolls his eyes. They both seem to know just what had Steve so distracted. He blushes scarlet, and Rachel just laughs harder. Oh, Steve, she says when she finally manages to get a hold of herself. It's impossible to stay mad at you. She pours him a beer and doesn't charge him. Despite his excitement to share this part of his life with Bucky, Steve was still a little wary about bringing him to Sully's. This place is special, and he thought Bucky might not like it, might not be comfortable, might take some time to get used to it and relax. A more reasonable fear would have been that everyone here would like Bucky better than him. And of course, Bucky charms them all immediately, but Steve doesn't mind it. Instead, he just watches Bucky joke and laugh, leaning back in his stool and smiling a private little smile. This is what it must feel like to take out a beautiful dame. He wants to show Bucky off, to let all this pride just burst out of him, because Bucky's pretty goddamn great, and he's here with Steve. Raoul bemoans the fact that he never got one little kiss from Steve before he found himself a sweetheart. Peter pulls a sketch out of his wallet, just a drunken little cartoon Steve did of the bar a month ago. But he brags to Bucky that it'll be worth a lot of money someday when Steve's a famous artist. Like Bucky's not got hundreds over his lifetime. Sully grunts at Bucky when Rachel introduces them, but he nods a little at Steve. Last fall, when Bucky had only been to the bar a handful of times, Sully caught Steve frowning at a trio of fairies, all dolled up in flouncy blouses and red lips. When Sully demanded to know if Steve had a problem with a specific kind of his clientele, Steve shrugged and said, "People have been calling me a fairy for as long as I can remember. Guess it's about time I accept my fate, huh?" Sully got a little soft with him then, leaning over the bar and telling Steve that he doesn't have to be anything he's not. Sully said, "There's no right way to be queer. There's no rules. If you want to dress like a lady, or live two lives with a family back home, or if you just want to be a fella who loves another fella, it's all great. You can figure it out as you go." Sully's looking at him like he knows that Steve's figured it out. Like he's a fella who loves another fella. Like he's happy. At some point, Sully shoos Rachel out from behind the bar and relieves her for the night. The three of them end up in a booth in the corner, and Steve's about to ask Bucky again if this is okay. That they're here together and everyone knows. But then Bucky slings an arm over Steve's shoulders, pulling him close. And that seems like the answer. Bucky's tipsy and happy, and, best of all, seems to really like Rachel. "So we're in Harlem," Rachel says, and Steve groans, hiding his face in Bucky's chest because, miraculously, that's allowed here. "So we're in Harlem," Rachel repeats, as she is apt to do after a drink or two. At this drag ball with Peter, Bucky's eyebrows go way up. "Drag ball? You've had this whole secret life. Who are you really, Steve Rogers?" Unlike that night months ago, when Steve confessed that Sully's is a queer bar, Bucky doesn't sound mad at it or hurt that Steve kept something from him. Just delighted that he gets to hear some new story about Steve that is sure to embarrass him. And we stumble out of there, hanging off each other to stay upright and get home. Rachel continues. "Oh no," says Steve. "Please don't." He is ignored. When of course these goons appear out of nowhere, trying to get us to go home with them. It seems like they knew about the ball and mistook me for a drag queen. Which is fine. The queens look great. I look great. We were a bunch of good-looking ladies. But then one of them decides they need to take a look up my dress to see what's going on down there for himself. "I didn't like that much," Rachel says. "You kicked him," Steve reminds her, right between the legs. Bucky throws his head back when he laughs. It makes his neck look real good. "So the guy goes down," Rachel says. "The guy goes down, as I expected. But instead of hoofing it the heck out of there, Stephen here chooses to instead hurl himself at one of the guy's buddies, all furious fists and drunken yelling." Bucky laughs again. Steve just sighs. "Okay, that's my Steve. That's definitely him. Turns out I do know you. You completely predictable putz." "Ha," says Rachel, raising her glass to Bucky. "Putz." "Then what happened?" asks Bucky. His eyes are all bright and twinkling. He's so happy, so himself, here at Sully's with his arm thrown over Steve's shoulder like it belongs there. Steve loves him so much, he's fit to burst with it. "Well, Steve gets pummeled pretty good." "Of course," says Bucky, nodding. "And for a minute there, I really thought we might be done for. But then out of nowhere, our friend Claudette appears. Like some sort of statuesque avenging angel." "Bless that, Claudette," Steve murmurs. This is a good story now, but without Claudette's intervention, he could have gotten real hurt. Could have gotten Rachel real hurt. "Now, Claudette is pretty tall, but not quite as broad as your average drag queen," Rachel explains. "Although, thankfully, she does have fists the size of boulders. And she managed to free Steve without much trouble. The three of us fled the scene, but the schmucks who accosted us didn't seem to be in the shape to follow." "Ha," says Bucky, raising his glass to Rachel. "Schmucks. You know, it's usually me dragging Steve out of fights. But I'm glad Claudette got the opportunity to take a turn. All's well that ends well." "That wasn't the end," says Steve, shuddering at the memory. Rachel grimaces. "So when I say Claudette is our friend, she's really Sully's friend. And when the three of us made it back to Brooklyn, she wouldn't just let Steve go on home. No, she had to drag us both in front of Sully to confess the whole tale." "Rachel did not have permission to go to the drag ball," says Steve. "Sully did a lot of yelling that night. Most of it directed at Rachel, but Steve's whole life flashed before his eyes when Sully got in his face. You took a 16-year-old all the way to Harlem for a ball. What? Are you stupid or something, kid? Rachel says, imitating Sully's voice. You could have got yourselves arrested or worse. Wait, says Bucky, blinking rapidly. 16? You're 16? Jesus, that's my kid sister's age. I'm 17 now, thank you very much. And then, without so much as pausing, she says, guess who I ran into the other day?
Who?
Asks Bucky. Zelda, guesses Steve. How'd you know? Rachel crosses her arms over her chest, pouting. You got that look, the one you get when you're talking about beautiful actresses, all dreamy and dopey. Dopey? How's Zelda? Bucky asks. He looks faintly guilty and extremely confused. Zelda? Rachel says, grinning wide. Is excellent. Yeah? Steve chuckles a little. Rachel's good moods are always so damn infectious. Yeah. You gonna tell us the story or what? Steve asks, when Rachel seems content to silently stare off, that dopey look back on her face. Well, like I said, I ran into her.
You just ran into her?
Sure, says Rachel, smirking now. I remembered when she said her shift was ending at the hospital last weekend, and I just sort of loitered around the entrance until she appeared. Rachel, Steve scolds. Don't stalk the poor girl. Wait, why would you stalk Zelda? Bucky asks. He stares at Rachel with his head cocked to the side for a minute, probably replaying their disastrous double date in his head. His eyes go a little wide when he finally seems to pick up on the fact that Rachel was obviously far more interested in Zelda than Steve. Oh, he says, and Rachel laughs. I'm serious about the stalking, Rachel, Steve says, patting Bucky's knee under the table. Nursing is hard, and the last thing she needs at the end of a long shift is you ambushing her. Oh, what do you know, Stephen? She was happy to see me. Real happy. Oh, boy. Steve's genuinely concerned that Rachel's gonna get her heart broken, or worse, over some normal girl. There's more of us out there than you think there are, Rachel says. She sounds far older and wiser than she is. And I told you I had a good feeling about Zelda. What? Says Steve, still skeptical. Are you saying you're right about her? Rachel absolutely smirks at him, leaning back in her chair and waggling her eyebrows. Rachel! Steve's cheeks burn bright red. He'll never be used to it. The way Rachel acts so brazen and so bold. Wow, says Bucky, nodding his approval, looking at Rachel like he's impressed rather than scandalized. You really need to trust my good feelings, Steve, Rachel says. I'm gonna invite her to the bar. By the end of the night, Rachel's managed to mostly convince them both that she really does have a date with Zelda. She and Buck have bonded over their mutual love of Jewish pastries and have slurred their way through several broken renditions of what might be Mein Stetele Belz. It's difficult to say. Alcohol always turns Bucky's typical melodic voice into caterwauling, and Rachel, even under the best circumstances, can't sing her way out of a barn. Come on, says Steve, somehow the steadiest on his feet. Time to go home, I need sleep. Oh, is it sleep you need? Bucky smirks up at him. It only lasts a moment, before Bucky's mouth turns into a flat line as he frowns. Wait, you do need sleep. How's your back? You okay, pal? Let's get you some sleep. Steve rolls his eyes and drags Bucky to his feet. He can feel Rachel grinning at them, but he refuses to look at her. Steve honestly thought he'd show up here and she'd take his shoulders between her hands, shaking him around and chanting, "I told you so." Instead of bragging about her wisdom, she's just happy for him. And it's nice. Steve helps Bucky into his coat and then slings Bucky's arm over his shoulder, bracing them as Bucky sways. Bucky leans away, mutters about standing on his own. "My back's fine, Bucky," Steve assures him, pulling them close together again. "Come here. It's cold out. Need you to keep me warm." Bucky huffs, his lips hot on the shell of Steve's good ear. "You manipulating me into hanging all over you, Rogers? Is that what this is?" Steve beams and pulls Bucky towards the door. "Come over for dinner tomorrow," Rachel says, holding the door open for them. "Upstairs, to the apartment. I'll make some real Jew food." Bucky perks right up. "Matzo ball soup?" Rachel giggles. "You haven't lived until you've had my bubby's recipe for matzo ball soup." "I don't know. My bubby does all right." Rachel smiles so wide it looks like it might hurt. "That settles it. You have to come over and compare." "Okay," says Steve. The walk home is one Steve's done 100 times in the last few months. Only now, Bucky's with him, chattering in his ear over all the people he met and the outlandish things they said. Nothing's changed much. Bucky's making the walk back from Sully's with him, but they still go to work, and they still come home to each other. They still give each other a hard time. Bucky acting like a bit of an ass, and Steve throwing his elbows into his side, trying not to laugh. At home, when they sit together on the sofa, listening to the radio at night, Bucky still pulls Steve's feet into his lap, and Steve still gets all mushy when Bucky drags his thumb over the sharp bones of his ankle. The easy affection between them was always there, and it strikes Steve as they walk, with Bucky's arm still thrown over his shoulder, that they were never very good at not being together. Even when Bucky was dating his way through the daughters of Winnie's friends, and Steve was lying about where he spent a good chunk of his time, there were still casual touches between them, hugs and hair ruffles, and Steve's feet in Bucky's lap. Even when they weren't together the way Steve wanted to be, it still felt like they were. And maybe that's why Steve never had much interest in all the attractive men parading through the bar. "Hey, Buck?" Steve asks, glancing up to look at Bucky, only to find Bucky already staring down at him. There's a small change. Before, Bucky wouldn't look at him like that, especially not in public. And Steve caught him more than once, turning away quickly, like he didn't want to be seen staring. "Yeah?" Bucky murmurs. He's so close, his breath warms Steve's cheek. "Just thank you, I guess." Bucky frowns, a little furrow appearing between his brows. If they were at home, he'd rub the fold away with his fingers until Bucky's smiling again. That's another small change. "What for?" Bucky asks, suspicious. "For coming with me to the bar." Steve blushes. He stares down at his shoes. "Sorry I didn't tell you about it for so long." "No," says Bucky, soft and instant. It's good that you found a place for yourself. I'm glad you went out and found something that's just yours. Well, I might have found it, but everywhere is better with you around, Buck. It's just better. Bucky presses his forehead into Steve's temple, his grip getting tighter. And Steve doesn't have to look up to know that Bucky's smiling, indulgent and fond. Steve would get so jealous when Bucky would grin all charming and cocky at girls. But this expression on Bucky's face is far better. It's softer, more intimate and genuine than anything Bucky gives anyone else. That's why you've always stuck with each other, Steve, Bucky says in his ear. Everything is just better.